Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. Hour number two. It's Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO. Take you until 1 o'clock. Bottom of the hour, Scott Docterman from The Athletic. Trends plays of the day. Circus Sports sponsor those. For those of you filling out your lineup cards at home, here's the Cubs starting lineup for the 121st pitch opening day at Wrigley Field. Hap, Suzuki, Bellinger, Christopher Morel, who hit a home run. Over the weekend, we'll bat fourth, Swanson fifth, Michael Bush at first, batting sixth, Nico Horner seventh, Tauchman in right, and then Yan Gomes and Managa on the hill for your Cubbies as they take on those pesky Rockies.
I can't believe that that's what Council trotted out there. What a terrible job. I think he needs to be fired.
We don't overreact until game six, remember?
Game six. Okay. Game six. That's a cutoff.
Let's get to, speaking of baseball, I got him on, Matt Snyder, CBSSports.com. He joins us. Hello, Matt Snyder. Good to speak with you. How are you?
Very good. Hey, is this a six-game rule you guys came up with?
Six rule, yep.
Yeah, I like it.
Can't overreact what we saw the first weekend, but after that, no holds barred.
Yeah, come Wednesday.
It's we're after it. Oh, man. So let's overreact, shall we, after the first three games of the
sure.
season? Because it was fun to watch the Yankees and the Astros. I wasn't sure, and it's still not, that the Yankees are going to be as good as some thought that they were going to be. I just can't get enough of this Orioles team with all this young talent, and there's more coming. But the Astros and the Yankees was one of those series, I don't care where it falls on the calendar, that you pay attention to it, and I know you did. What did you learn, Matt Snyder?
Well, I mean, it's probably shouldn't take a ton away because it's just such a small sample. This would be like, what, you know, two possessions into the NFL season making sweeping declarations. But so with that caveat in mind, Yankees resilience, I think, has to be mentioned there. They were down three times to the Astros and won their first three games after being down. Yesterday they had a 3-1 lead. The Astros tied it to make it 3-3, and the Yankees still prevailed. They scored off Josh Hader, and four games swept the Astros in Houston. That is impressive, and that has to be mentioned. Pirates winning 4 in Miami has to be mentioned.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. I do think the Marlins are terrible. They were going to be bad anyway, but their starting pitching is completely ravaged. But still, you go and you sweep four games on the road. That has to be mentioned. That's very impressive. I thought the Rangers offense was pretty much what we thought it would be. They're absolutely relentless. Even without Corey Seager in the lineup yesterday, they're just scary. And of course, Braves. I mean, they lost yesterday, but to take 2 of 3 in Philadelphia with their offense, just a complete wrecking crew. And their one loss was only by one run. The Braves are as advertised again. And of course, again, only six games, but I feel like this is what the Dodgers are going to be. They're going to be inconsistent with the pitching, and offensively they're just going to have explosions, and you're never, ever, ever going to feel comfortable with them. Even remember that game in South Korea, they were basically getting blown out, but they still made the Padres sweat.
In game two, yeah. Yep.
At one point, and then that the Saturday night loss by the Dodgers, they scored two runs to tie it in the ninth and ended up with Ohtani at the plate with the bases loaded to end the game. And then last night, it looked like they were going to lose, and they get the Max Muncy go-ahead home run in the eighth inning. It's just that's how it's going to be. They're not going to win more than probably 100, 101 games, but even in their losses, they're going to terrify you with that offense.
Is Ohtani a slow starter? Sorry, Trent, because he seems like he's off to a slow. Maybe we just expect him, right, to do unworldly things every time he's in the batter's box. But he's been up in some big spots and hasn't delivered so far.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the few everyday players that that doesn't have a home run for the Dodgers, Teoscar and Betts. Where should Dodger fans be on Ohtani? Is this off the field stuff? You know, is it playing a role in his start? Do you think?
It's possible. I mean, it's only six games, so we don't want to go too crazy with that. And, I mean, he's hitting 269 with a 310 on base, so it's not like he's like 0 for 25 or something ridiculous like that. But, yeah, he doesn't look like what we've expected to see from Shohei Ohtani, what we've come to expect over the last three seasons offensively. Well, throughout his career, basically, offensively, not what we've come to expect. But, you know, he's coming off Tommy John surgery. Remember, Bryce Harper's power didn't come back until August last year, coming off that Tommy John surgery. Harper was later. He didn't have his surgery until November. Ohtani had it in September. So a couple months there. So maybe he doesn't see his power come back until the middle of May, Memorial Day even. But I have wondered, I will admit, in the four games since all those gambling scandal accusations came out, I have wondered, like, is this weighing on him at all? Because as much as he's a superhuman baseball player, he's still a human being. And how could it not kind of bother him a little bit?
Speaking of the Dodgers, Yamamoto won on Saturday night and watched a lot of late in that game because, well, the basketball is finally over and flipped over to the Dodgers
Kids
and the Cardinals.
Are in bed.
Absolutely.
Waiting for the rabbit.
Well, helping out the rabbit. We were doing that. And Yamamoto pitched both sides of the rain delay. The first rain delay at Dodger Stadium in 7 years, which was weird. After the dreadful start against the Padres, I don't know how much of that, if any, you saw out of that, but definitely the bounce back you hoped for.
Yeah, his stuff looks great. Both the splitter and the curveball were on point. They're his out pitches. He was getting swings and misses on both and making hitters like Paul Goldschmidt just look absolutely silly with it. So it's a shame that there was a rain delay to break it up and hold him to five innings, but he was efficient. He was not walking guys. He was getting the swings and misses. I think he's fine. It's always possible that, you know, coming over for spring training to America for the first time and then having to go all the way back to Asia, and obviously South Korea is different than Japan, but you're flying all the way back there, and then you fly all the way back to America right after that. Mm-hmm. It's possible it just messed with him. It's possible it was just a one-off bad outing and the travel didn't mess with him at all. Again, we'll see, but I have a hunch that he's going to be completely dominant moving forward. I'm just interested to see how they deal with the workload because, again, as I've said before on the show, I'm sure there's only one time zone in Japan. So the travel is an adjustment. They only pitch once a week there instead of once every 5 days. So that's an adjustment. He hasn't pitched 200 innings in a season before. So are they going to want to push him that far, especially knowing that they want to make a deep playoff run? So watch his workload. But, yeah, he's going to be dominant a lot.
The Cardinals, look, they're playing against Dodgers. I get that. But I don't know what kind of season they're going to have. I still don't think they're going to win the division. I hope they're in contention. It's better for business when they are. But there's two guys that in this lineup that might make me tune in and watch the Cardinals a little bit more. And it's not Goldschmidt. It's not Arenado. It's Scott and Wynn. Scott can absolutely fly. What a great story he is. And Wynn, boy, he's a gifted shortstop. What about those two? What do the Cardinals have in these two youngsters?
Well, it's the Cardinals, to me, even going back pretty much throughout this entire century, I know that they've had sluggers, and you think of Albert Pujols first and foremost, obviously, but Paul Goldschmidt won an MVP. They've got Arenado around. But for me, the calling card of the Cardinals was always run prevention. It was good starting pitching, excellent defense. These two guys look like they can be a part of that next wave of the excellent defense there. And obviously, Arenado at third is a veteran who's a great defender at third, next to Wynn at short, Victor Scott in center. You always talk about the defense starts up the middle. And with Wynn at short, Scott in center field, you're taking care of the up-the-middle defense there. And of course, offensively, like, don't leave Jordan Walker behind. I know he's one for 10 or 12 or something right now. Only 22 years old. And Nolan Gorman, he's a power hitter, still very young as well. So they've got a good core there, both offensively and defensively, that they can build around. Going to start to need to see something starting pitching-wise, though.
Yes, that's true.
In terms of the run prevention, they do have the defensive side. And again, that, for me, was their calling card for a long time, even when they had powerful offense.
This just in, Juan Soto is pretty good at baseball. A monster performance in the opening weekend here. We know the pitching concerns that they have, and obviously with the injury to Cole, what that's going to be. Do you have any hope that he's actually going to be able to come back this year, or are they just delaying the inevitable?
I still have hope because I feel like with that contract, if they knew that he needed Tommy John surgery, I feel like he would get it right away. So okay. He could be back for as much of next year as possible. Mm-hmm. And we've seen guys delay things before and come back and they were okay. The most prominent one that comes to mind is Masahiro Tanaka. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tanaka never got Tommy John surgery, and there were people like, get the surgery right now, get the surgery right now. And he was fine and he never got it. Unfortunately, most of the other examples we have, they eventually had.
Yes.
So we'll see. I'm holding out hope that he's okay because I think baseball's better with Gerrit Cole in it, not just because he's so good, but because the workhorse starting pitcher is kind of going away, and he's one of the last true over 200 innings every single year workhorses. Obviously, he can't get there this year, but if he came back and he was his old self, he would still be one of those guys that gives you 7 to 8 innings every single night.
The Oakland A's, this isn't tenable, right? I mean, I think they're high. Well, opening day, they had, what did they have, 10,000, then 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 over the opening weekend of baseball. They can't play another year in Oakland, can they?
I think that they're going to try. We knew it was going to look like this, right? Like, you know the team's moving, so the fan base is completely alienated. Why would you keep going and giving money to that owner? Even if you still love the team, I feel like you would have to just watch them on TV instead of, again, forking over money to the owner that completely screwed you over and is going to take your team away. It's still possible they'll end up in, like, Salt Lake City or Sacramento maybe for a year, but it seems like at least for now the best option is Oakland, and they seem content to stay there. I hope they leave because we know they're going to end up in Vegas by 2028. The crowds are only going to get worse this year because they're really bad. I don't think they're as bad as last year when they lost 112 games, but they're going to lose over 100 again. And when the crowd already knows that they're not going to be there anyway, it's going to get worse. And the players deserve better. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as much as they are a bad team, they still have some young talent such as Brent Rooker or Zach Gelof, where they deserve fans to actually play in front of. So I hope that things improve moving forward for players like Gelof, Estuary, Ruiz. Players like that deserve to be in front of a crowd.
Got all excited and was making all my bets before the season began, including to win the NL Cy Young and Justin Steele, and he promptly has a hamstring injury fielding a bunt. Now, it sounds like the news is relatively okay on this front. What are you hearing on Justin Steele and, what, back here in about a month?
Yeah, it seems like they're saying it's mild. It's not near as bad as it could be. If they say a month, that means he should be able to get back to throwing pretty quickly. Because if it was a complete shutdown for a month, then he's got to build his arm back up and he's got to go through a minor league rehab assignment. If they're saying he's back on the mound in Wrigley in a month, I'm incredibly encouraged. Because, like, look, obviously losing an ace is a big deal. But if it's only 2, 3, 4 starts, it's not the hugest deal in the world. If it's 2 months, it starts to become a big deal because even though I thought the Cubs were going to win the Central, I think the margin's pretty thin there. And if you end up saying you lose an ace for 10 starts, that might be a 2 or 3 game swing, and that might cost you the division ultimately. So I'm holding out hope that it's a very quick comeback. If not, you have to hold out hope that Jameson Taillon comes back very quickly, and then he looks like the guy that signed, not the guy that he was for the first half last year. You're going to need to see strides from guys like Wicks, and you're going to see Imanaga. Hopefully it starts today.
Yeah.
You need to see him start to pitch like a frontline starter because Justin Steele is very, very important to this team.
No, there's no question about that. It was certainly unfortunate. I thought I saw something that maybe the second last week of April, there might be a rehab start for Steele at some point, so we shall see. But otherwise, from the Cubs, what did you see opening weekend? Obviously, a really good Texas team.
Yes, relentless offense from the Rangers, as I mentioned. Cubs pitching, other than Steele, not great, but, you know, thrown into a bad spot. When you have your ace, who's dealing at the time, go down, then you have to kind of scramble with the bullpen. Really, about 10 feet on that Christopher Morel foul ball away from taking 2 of 3 from the world champs on the road to start the season. Not all bad. I was not feeling very good Saturday night, I will say that. Feeling a lot better after yesterday to go out and get that win. Even when the Rangers kept coming, the Cubs kept answering. That was good to see. I still think that they're going to be one of the best teams in the Central. The Steele injury does worry me because, again, if I thought they were going to win the Central by 2 or 3 games, that injury might swing things 2 or 3 games. We'll see, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, coming into the year, we knew there were 2 cross-off teams, right? The Rockies and the A's were going to be brutal. You mentioned you thought the A's maybe a tick better than last year, but still not good. Can we throw the White Sox in that mix, too?
Yeah.
We got 3 cross-off teams right now.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I would think about the Marlins. Ooh. I thought they were going to be bad anyway, and their rotation is completely ravaged by injuries, and that was what they were going to have to live and die with because the offense wasn't very good in the first place. So now you lose your entire rotation to injuries, and that was supposed to be the strength. Maybe not that bad. Like, the Nationals are pretty bad, too, I think. But, hey, they other than the opening day, throw that away. They fought the Reds, and they almost won 2-3 until the Reds hit those two bombs yesterday. So maybe they're not as bad. Three's plenty right now.
It is.
Rockies, A's, and White Sox. Yeah, that's plenty for now.
No Mets.
They might be there quickly.
Oh, boy.
It's bad.
I didn't think the Brewers were going to be very good, and they just made the Mets look terrible in many, many ways. I mean, the Mets even fell apart mentally.
Right, the Rhys Hopkins thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just not a good showing from them at all. There's only so much Pete Alonso can do. That was terrible.
What? I mean, this has got to be – there's got to be history here with Hoskins,
yeah,
I mean, right?
Yeah, they
back in
kept bringing that up on the Mets broadcast.
Did they?
They
yeah.
both kind of – they both the way that Hoskins said he always whines about something every time something goes wrong, there's more than meets the eye there. Like, they've had issues before that not a lot of people knew about, surely.
Yeah, it has to be. What's the best series this weekend that we could look forward to? I guess off the top of your head, anybody?
I hadn't even looked ahead.
Dodgers Cubs might be fun.
Ooh, yeah,
that's this weekend.
There, and it's in Wrigley's Dodger Stadium.
Houston versus Texas.
If the Guardians keep winning, I think the Twins need to make a statement. If the Pirates keep winning, Pirates Orioles, because the Orioles are great. Man, Astros Rangers. The Astros have to start winning.
How about Diamondbacks Braves?
Diamondbacks Braves is a great one. Yeah. I'm going to go with Astros Rangers.
That's pretty good.
It's in Globe Life where the Astros won all three games in the ALCS and the bench is cleared, but the Rangers still won the series and the World Series. That's where it is. Oh, hey, Yankees Blue Jays.
There's a lot of good ones.
Man, there's a lot of good series this weekend.
And we missed the World Series preview with the Orioles and the Pirates.
Yeah. No, I said it.
That one.
I said if the Pirates were still winning.
My. Sunday Night Baseball is Houston and Texas. Should be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Good stuff, Matt Snyder. Your power rankings are out at CBSSports.com. CBSSports.com. White Sox fans, cover your eyes. But get used to it. Now, on that front, you have Braves 1, Dodgers 2. I'm guessing... Will we go a whole season with one of those two teams on top of your power rankings from start to finish?
It's possible.
I think it is, isn't it?
Especially when you have the cushion when you say one of those two. Because, like, number one, even, like, the 2018 Red Sox or 2016 Cubs, they took their lumps a few times and got demoted a few times. Yeah, it could be one of those two. I could see the Orioles breaking in there. I could see the Astros at some point, if they ever learn how to win at home again, breaking in there. But, yeah, you could totally, when you give me that cushion and say one of those two, it's totally possible that it would be one of those two all year.
Good stuff, Matt Snyder. More Boys Baseball Conversation 1 week from today when you join us, as you do every Monday at 12:05. CBSSports.com for Matt Snyder's power rankings and other stuff is up on CBSSports.com. Matt, thank you.
Take care, guys.
Good to talk to you, buddy. Matt Snyder, as we talk a little MLB. Love that segment. Love the game. Braves-Dodgers 1-2 for Snyder.
And baseball's going to take a backseat again for me tonight.
Yeah, me too.
Then the NIT, no.
That's tomorrow. It's not bad because Indiana State's playing.
Indiana State.
Yeah.
Utah's good team. Got a future on them in the NIT.
Oh, you do?
Got them at 5-1.
Yeah. And those games are at Hinkle?
Yes, yeah.
When did Madison Square Garden give this up?
Has
it been a few years?
Because it was in Vegas last year, if memory serves, something like that.
Might have been.
Yeah.
But pretty cool spot site for it this year.
Yes, absolutely.
I wonder if that's where it becomes a destination, I guess, if this is where the permanent home.
Or are they going to bid it out and they think they can make at least a little bit of money there, kind of moving it around and going to different locales? Does, you know, Dayton, the way that they have obviously been able to handle the first four, they get something? What would a NIT Final Four do in Des Moines? Nothing.
Well, what else is going on?
Right? I mean, do you take the venue? You have concerts in there. You got the Wild season coming to a close. They've been on the road a ton. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Wolves. Is it worth it for something like that? I don't know. I don't know how it would hit here. With no local interest, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Fair question. Scott Dockerman on Iowa when we come back. It's Miller and Condon, 1225, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. All right, 12:30, Miller and Kahn, the Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Scott Dockerman joins the program. Scott writes for The Athletic, where he covers the University of Iowa, the Big Ten, and the NFL Draft, which is 3 weeks, 4 weeks, until it's April. Be here before we know it. Let's get Doc in here. Hello, Scott Dockerman, Trent and Ken. Thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How about yourselves today?
Doing pretty well. What do you got planned tonight, Doc?
I'll probably watch a basketball
game. Yeah, I think we will,
6:15,
too.
I think. So.
I think we will as well. Look, it's the hype surrounding it. Seldom do we see games live up to the hype that it precedes. But I just get the feeling this one just might. And can you imagine how many eyeballs are going to be on it if indeed it's, you know, a close game as we're approaching 9 o'clock Eastern toward the end of the game? Oh, my gosh. The television numbers are just going to be through the roof, are they not?
My expectation is they will, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the ESPN set it up well. And they knew what they were doing when last weekend when they put Iowa as a Saturday, Monday, and then this week they're doing the same thing. And, you know, you kind of wonder about the bracket and how it was put together to make sure that if they're going to play, at least they're going to play. Kind of like when in the World Cup, when you get an England-Germany type of situation. That's kind of what I equate this
That's
to.
That's good.
Because, you know, tremendous rivalry. And when anytime you get it, it doesn't matter where. But, you know, the fact that it's in the regional finals instead of the Final Four, it's, you know, that's the only thing that I think it'll keep it from a record number like last year's championship.
Doc, a theory that we brought up a week ago, this Iowa team getting away from Iowa City, getting away from the fishbowl environment, is that maybe just exactly what the doctor ordered? They looked so good against Colorado, a Colorado team that was talented, that beat LSU by 14 earlier this year, had four starters back from a year ago, and they just toyed with them and kind of did whatever they wanted. Getting away from Iowa City, think that's a good thing for this squad?
It's probably a good thing mentally, I would say, Trent, you know, for them just to, because it is, it's weird that we're saying that having a crazy sold-out crowd that where the decibel level rarely hit below 100 is a bad thing. But the thing is, when everybody is there and so intense and the pressure, you know, I think the pressure is big on the host schools for that first weekend because you've got to get through. And I'll say this, that there are differences in defense between the two teams, West Virginia and Colorado. And I'm not so sure Colorado couldn't have beaten West Virginia head-to-head, but West Virginia's defense was very difficult for Iowa to play against because they were so physical. In some ways, I almost equate it to like when somebody plays Iowa football and you play that defense and they just drag you into the mud and then it becomes a, you know, 10-7 game and exactly what you don't want to do. And that was kind of the way it was last week with West Virginia and Iowa. But I think, you know, what Colorado does defensively is kind of like what Iowa does. And when Iowa could get out and run, there's just nobody that can beat them at that game. Nobody can beat them at that game. And the other day, that's what we saw because Colorado had, I think they were 312th in three-point defense. And in the first half, they really overhelped in that area, and then it blew them up in points on the paint. In the second half, they tried to curtail that, and then Iowa just rolled them. So I think that's but getting away, even though that they're going to have a home court advantage, LSU, but it's still going to be it's probably good for them mentally just to kind of hit the road because I think that happens a lot in sports.
Caitlin Clark has to be Caitlin Clark, obviously, and she will because she always is. But is there maybe the rest of that roster, is Gabby Marshall perhaps under the most pressure, Doc? Not saying she has to make, you know, what she got, four or five from the three-point line, 14 points overall. Not saying she doesn't need to duplicate that, but she kind of needs to duplicate that. Is she maybe the other Hawk that's got the most pressure on her other than Caitlin Clark?
I would actually go with Hannah Stolke because I think because she's going up against Angel Reese and they've got some tremendous players in the post. And Anisha Morrow, you go against those two. I mean, you've got your work cut out for you and you cannot get overly dominated in that regard. And I think when you look at LSU and rebound margin, they're second in the country at 12.5 per game. I mean, you know, and they're second in scoring behind Iowa, you know, in the country. So you've got to make sure that you're in the post, you're not fouling, but you're defending. And that, to me, puts a lot of pressure on them. Now, you know, of course, I think Iowa's going to want to hit as many three-pointers as possible. And you look at those numbers, and they're pretty excessive in Iowa's favor. I mean, they're ninth in the country in three-point shooting percentage, and they're first in three-pointers per game. Iowa is at 11, whereas, LSU is 98th in three-point percentage and 302nd in three-pointers per game. So anything that Gabby Marshall can do, or Kate Martin, for that matter, can do in this, then I think it's just a major plus. But I think, you know, Hannah Stolke, probably Addison O'Grady, don't get in foul trouble. Make sure to match up when you can, and try to make it as close to even as possible in the post, because this is a team that can dominate you in that area.
You mentioned O'Grady a year ago. She had to play a lot in that national championship game because of the foul trouble to Monica Sinano. And because of that, she actually played pretty well. Had a bucket in there, 5 rebounds, 3 block shots. Do you anticipate she's going to be a bigger part of the game plan here going against the two-headed monster that they have inside with Morrow and Reese?
Yeah, she's going to have to. I mean, this is just too talented of a team to just, you know, say we're going to run 4 guards up and down the floor. And if they can do that, they'll do it and they'll win going away. But I don't see that being the case. I think that she's going to have to play well. I think you're going to have a couple other players that eat up some minutes in there. And maybe they don't score. Maybe they just defend. Maybe they foul. But they've got to make sure that they pace themselves, because the absolute worst possible thing that they could do is for like Hannah Stolke to get 2 fouls in the first 5 or 6 minutes. I don't think there's anything, any scenario I see worse than that. So they've got to protect her. And how do you do that? Well, in a lot of cases, you're going to have to bring somebody in, a more physical big, or somebody who you can handle inside for a little while. And so I think that would probably be the case to do it. But LSU also has to guard Iowa.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that they can keep up with Iowa either on that side, when it comes to up and down the floor.
How about the showcase for women's basketball tonight, Doc? I mean, both games.
It's as big of a night for women's basketball, I think, in history. And it's because it's got the combination of organic, play. I mean, people are legitimately excited to watch them play with superstars that we don't have in the men's game. And this has been a growth for them. I mean, we've heard, Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark, of course, have been around for a few years. Juju Watkins now is a freshman superstar, and Angel Reese is also, especially once she left Maryland, has really become a star. And I think, you see the names, the faces, the fact that they're sold out environments, it's going to be a night that we'll never forget one way or the other for Iowa fans, but certainly for the sport, it's going to be put in a showcase that we have not seen.
Outside of the histrionics at the end of the game, the finger waving, the you can't see me from Angel Reese to Caitlin Clark, one of the craziest storylines to me is LSU and Kim Mulkey manufacturing disrespect for Iowa's game plan against South Carolina. And they use that as motivation in a game plan that wasn't for them. It was in the game plan against South Carolina. Kim Mulkey, she knows how to push buttons. What's she going to come up with here? What do you anticipate is going to be that storyline? We're going to find out afterwards how she tried to motivate her team.
Anything's possible with Kim Mulkey,
yes.
I think. As we've seen, the way she, has gone after the Washington Post and for them, for Kent Babb to contact her relatives or whatever. I mean, that's just part of a story.
Right.
I mean, gathering process. There's nothing to that. And if she tries to sue, she'll get laughed out of court, But then again, it's all about head games in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of pressure she can put on the other team, what kind of chip she can put on her own shoulders, and the players buy into that. And I'm sure there's, something to the effect of, look, there are more people here for Iowa. Everybody wants Iowa to win. They don't care about you. I mean, there's a lot of angles you can drudge up there. But, for Iowa, I think it's just about staying loose, staying relaxed. Don't put a lot of pressure on yourself. There's going to be runs. They're going to fall behind a little bit at times. But they've got to they've got a team too. And they got a team that's been there it's incredibly motivated. I mean, yesterday, Kim Mulkey said something to the effect of, I can't imagine that they're more motivated than we are. Well, Iowa lost to you in the finals.
That's right.
I mean, and they have the best player in the country.
Yeah.
And so I expect this to be a four-quarter battle. I mean, the spread is 2, and I would expect it to be in that range going into the final minutes.
That was, of all things, in the game last year, Trent pointed this out earlier, reminded everybody earlier, it was their three-point shooting, of all things, from what? Carson, right? Just went crazy. A team that didn't make any threes, but she couldn't miss last year, and had LSU fans going to their program and asking, who's this girl?
what an amazing, crazy twirl that was.
Unreal.
And they've got a couple that could do the same thing. I mean, I think Flo J is probably the one that you've got to be careful of a little bit, but, you know, and Michaela Williams, but, you know, they've averaged, you know, in the neighborhood of 1 to 1.5 per game, you know. So Iowa's hit 397 three-pointers. They've hit 153. So you would expect them that if they're going to hit those three-pointers, it's going to be with just a little, it'll be rare. I just don't see them being able to hit them with regularity. And this is, you know, as you mentioned with Gabby Marshall, that she, she's a 3-and-D player. And her defense against West Virginia was as good as I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think that I could see something like that again tonight, where maybe she only has a couple of three-pointers.
But
if she's able to slow down Flo J, for instance, or Michaela Williams, they'll be in great shape.
It's you anticipate Gabby Marshall gets Flajay Johnson. Is that the assignment they're going to put her on? And one thing I brought up earlier, Iowa, Lisa Bluter, Jan Jensen, they love the junk defenses. Do you box into a triangle into anticipate anything like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to have to be zone more. And why wouldn't you go zone? I mean, they're terrific in the post, and they've struggled out on the perimeter. And a lot of times with those teams, you just say, go ahead and shoot. You know, and if you make it, it is what it is. But and I expect them to go, you know, whether it's triangle and 2-2-3 zone, whatever, to do whatever they can to limit touches in the post. If they can effectively cause some turnovers that way, and then if they get running, if they get a lead, and LSU feels forced to come back. A lot of times teams do that from the three, and Iowa's actually got a pretty good three defense. I mean, they've only allowed 30% or so. So I mean, they're really there's a lot of positives here that if Iowa can run its offense, but a lot of that is going to be predicated on slowing down the ball into the post and avoiding foul trouble for Hannah Stolke.
What about Kim Mulkey being on the floor the whole time?
That's a great question. Will she get teed up?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we've seen teams for it. It was an embarrassment last year for women's college basketball. Her, not the histrionics on the sideline, so be it. But being on the floor,
Volume. Bluter she couldn't talk to them.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That was terrible a year ago. Do you anticipate they're going to have a crew that's going to tell her, hey, it's time for you to step back?
I would hope so. I think what it reminded me of was remember the Titans and the officiating crew was cheating against the Titans, and then Will Patton had to call in everybody, and that's what it felt like last year. Because Kim Mulkey being on the floor and she's running into officials and nothing's done, and then can I have a conversation?
Right.
So I think in this case, all I care about is it's called evenly, that the same rules apply to both teams. And if they're going to call it physical, that's fine. If they're going to call it loose, then that's fine too. But I think, when it comes to Kim Mulkey and her antics, you'd like to see some warnings being issued and possibly a T if that seems to happen. So, but we'll see.
Can't wait. Oh, the anticipation through the roof. Unbelievable. Scott Dockerman from The Athletic. Doc, what have you got coming up this week? We never got to football with you. We'll have an opportunity to do that next week. Pretty important game here tonight. What have you got? What will we be publishing this week at The Athletic?
Right now, it really depends on what happens tonight.
If Iowa
wins, I'm leaving for Cleveland Wednesday. If they don't, then I'm kind of kicking in the high gear on the draft and spring football front. So, it's just kind of a matter of, okay, which way do we go? And it'll be the same way with, like, availability for Iowa players and stuff.
Yep.
So, at this point, tonight is the night. It's the biggest night of the year. So, you know, what happens there, I'll be in Cleveland, and if they win, and we'll have a lot more Iowa basketball women's coverage for another week.
Enjoy Ohio, Doc.
They've got a good chance.
Fingers crossed. We'll talk with you next week, either way, whether if you're in Cleveland or making your way back or wherever, if your schedule allows. Thank you, Scott Dockman. Appreciate it, as always.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Thank you. Scott Dockman, as we check in on the Hawks. Yeah, he's right about Stalky.
Yes.
It's a fair point. I still think it's Gabby Marshall.
Yeah.
I mean, we know what she's going to do defensively, and I totally agree with you. She's got flow shade.
Good luck. Yep. Try to lock her up.
And if that takes away her offense, if she can lock up or limit flow shade, then okay. But boy, if she can hit a three early in the basketball game just to kind of set the tone, oh, that'll go a long way.
I'm looking at the numbers for Flaje Johnson over the last handful of games, going back to the SEC tournament, basically. She has hit a ridiculous rate. She's shooting like 70% from the three-point line over the last seven games.
What did you say?
70%.
That's what I thought you said. That's 17, 7-0.
7-0. Let's see. 5, 7, 9, 10. She is 12 for her last 8, 10, 17. 12 of her last 17.
Mm.
Yeah, can't allow that.
Mm-mm.
Cannot allow that to happen.
Well, defense is Gabby Marshall's calling card, and I think she follows her all over the floor.
A Fulter, rebound.
Yep.
Help out.
Mm-hmm. Score.
Beat whoever's playing you down the floor.
Yep.
Stolke ahead, throw aheads, and O'Grady has got to be there too.
She does.
He needs something out of her.
Yeah,
they got in the national championship game a year ago, and we've said it all season long. Though O'Grady wasn't the starter we thought coming into the year, there's going to be that moment. That moment very well could come tonight.
And Carson's not on the roster. She's not going to come in, right?
No,
she's not going to make an appearance at all. She led the team in scoring.
Yes.
Oh my
they scored 59 in the first half. They hit... what was it, 12 of 17 three-pointers in that game? They hadn't been close to that. They hadn't done it all season long. They were 9 of 12 in the first half. I got run out of the gym. They got it to 8, and then a stupid technical on Caitlin Clark, one of the most asinine calls that I can remember. That's honestly worse than the Cooper DeJean fair catch.
Really?
Yes. She was rolling the ball behind her back to the baseline. To call it technical on that.
I don't remember the play. Isn't that funny?
So lame.
We'll take a timeout. Come back. Trent's Plays of the Day. Circus Sports sponsor. It's Miller and Condon. Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO. Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. Final couple of minutes. Trent's Plays of the Day. Drake still does not have a head coach. Thought maybe the announcement would happen while we were on the air. I'm still told it's going to happen today. We'll see.
McCollum, though?
That's what we're hearing.
That's what the all signs pointing to.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll see. Do you embargo it till Sean and Heather go on the air?
Oh, you think they're going to get a little something there, huh?
Sean's awful good to Drake. Drake's, we'll see.
Not a bad thought.
Well, let's make some money. Are you betting more than one game tonight?
Yeah, we got six.
Okay.
Are we betting more than one game?
Well, I thought you may focus on that one.
Well, we do have that one. And yes, it is an emotional hedge. Not only, yes, everyone knows I'm a Hawkeye fan. And I've loved watching this team, and I want to do it again. And all right, if they're not going to win, at least I'll put a couple bucks in my pocket or in my account with LSU on the money line plus 110. But my sister lives in Cleveland. She just had a baby. I got a new niece. Talking about making the drive out to Cleveland if they make it.
So what you're telling me is I'm solo again on Friday.
Well, no, we'd do the show from there.
Okay.
And, or at least do a segment for the road, something like that. Make it happen one way or the other. But that aside.
Can you get tickets? Have you looked?
Oh, I can.
But the price, I mean.
Yeah.
Is it better by now, not knowing?
I think that's what I'm going to do, and even if it turns out to be $100, $200, because last year was ridiculous. It was so ridiculous, so I'm going to do that. Also going to play UConn tonight. Beckers wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's going to play better, going to lay the 3.5 with UConn. And then we got three baseball plays, including the Rockies.
What, against the Cubs?
Well, it's Amamaga in his first time out, just more of a fate of that,
uh-huh,
making his debut, plus 205, too.
I'm just hoping they get the game in.
Well, that's another part.
Right.
Give me the Reds plus 131 against the Phillies on the road tonight. I got Tampa minus 123 and the Guardians late tonight against Seattle minus 111 with little Tristan McKenzie on the bump.
Good stuff. We will obviously probably just, I guess, recap the game tomorrow morning.
Might be something that comes up.
Look forward to it. Murph and Andy, 5 minutes away. The Drive with Heather and Sean, 3 until 6 tomorrow morning. The Morning Rush at 6. We're Miller and Condon weekdays from 11 to 1 on Des Moines Sports Station 106.3 KXNO.